Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Wendy Dees, an associate professor at the University of Miami, where she is a part of the Sport Administration faculty. Her research focuses on corporate sponsorship effectiveness and event marketing strategies, and her scholarship has been cited over 194 times. For those who prefer shorter works of writing, she's also very active on Twitter, which is how I became acquainted with her work. It's great to have you here with us today, Ms. Dees.
Thanks.
To start off, can you introduce yourself so we can better get to know you?
Sure. I'm Dr. Wendy Dees, and I'm an associate professor here in the Sport Administration program at the University of Miami, and I'm currently teaching undergraduate and graduate courses in sports marketing, corporate sponsorship, and event management, and I can give you a little bit of background on why I teach those courses and kind of how I got to being here at the University of Miami. I did my undergraduate studies at Rollins College in Orlando, Florida. I was an All-American tennis player there, so I have a background as an intercollegiate athlete. When I graduated, I decided to work in the industry for several years before getting my master's and my PhD. I worked for Synergy Sports Marketing, which was a small agency at the time in Orlando, Florida, that specialized in sports marketing and event management for professional golf tournaments. So I was an account executive for Synergy, and my primary roles were to sell and service corporate sponsors, also to negotiate contract renewals with those sponsors at the end of each year, and then on site at the actual events, my role was to handle sponsorship activation for all of our partners, manage their corporate hospitality, and do any on-site event logistics with regard to corporate hospitality. So that industry experience is where I really developed my passion for sport business and knew that I wanted to go into sports marketing and event management, particularly as it pertained to corporate sponsors. And that's really where my passion and my research lies. So I knew that I needed more education and training since I didn't have a formal degree in sport business. So I got my master's degree in sport management at University of Florida and went on to get my PhD in sports marketing at Texas A&M.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you have a lot of good experience, both professionally and academically. Glad to have you here with us today.
Thanks.
We're going to be talking a little bit about an article that you wrote that you co-authored along with Warren Wisendant, Michael Bowling, and Taiwan Martin. It was published in the International Journal of Education and Research and is entitled Concession Sales, the Examination of Novelty Effect and Consumer Mood. Can you give us a brief introduction and overview about that article?
Sure. So I partnered with two of my colleagues here at the University of Miami, two other faculty members, Dr. Warren Wisendant and Dr. Taiwan Martin, and we wanted to look at one of the major marketing components for professional sports teams, which is their concession sales. So we know that there are a lot of different factors of the fan experience, and the concession sales are a really big part of that. I guess as a fan, I am always interested in the food and drink at sporting events, so I pay attention to it as a fan. But then as a sports marketer, I know that that is a significant revenue stream for sports teams. And we all wanted to take a closer look at how the fan experience can impact concession sales and how possibly teams can do a better job of increasing per capita concession sales at games. So the two main factors that we wanted to explore that we thought could possibly be impacting concession sales were the performance of the team at halftime, and also longitudinally, the impact of a long season on concession sales in a sport like the NBA, which is where we got access to the data. This was NBA concessions data. I can explain to you how we looked at those two different factors. Our first hypothesis was that at halftime of the game, if the home team was winning versus losing, we hypothesized that more fans would be interested in purchasing concessions and purchase more. The reason why we believe that, if you go back and look at the consumer mood research, the social psychological research with regard to consumer behavior, we know when you look at that research that when people are purchasing, when they're they're shopping, if they're happy, if they're excited, if they're in an elevated mood state that's positive, we know that people tend to shop more, purchase more quickly, or purchase things they don't even need, impulse purchasing. So we knew all of that based on the social psychological literature. So we took that over to sport and said, all right, how can we measure this in a sport setting? Since roughly 80% of concession sales are sold at halftime, that was the best time for us to measure concession sales. And at halftime, we hypothesized that people would be in the best, most positive, elevated mood if their team was winning. So we looked at whether the home team was winning or losing at halftime and whether concession sales increased or decreased based on that halftime lead. So that was our first hypothesis. And then the second, going back to looking at kind of these long sport seasons and how they may relate to concession sales, our second hypothesis looked at, it focused on novelty effect. So the theory of novelty effect says if something's new or novel or unique, you know, we pay more attention to that. As you have repeated exposure to the same stimuli over time, that uniqueness wears off and you don't get a strong of an outcome. So how that relates to concession sales in, let's say, a long NBA season is if you're a season ticket holder, a fan who attends a lot of games, you may be excited about eating the new food and drinks and experiencing all of that at the beginning of the season. But as the season wears on, it's kind of been there, done that. You've eaten the food over and over and over. And so we hypothesized that as the season went on, we would likely see a decline in per capita concession sales from the first half of the season to the second half, regardless of winning or losing. So those were the two things that we looked at.
Okay. Well, yeah, you've definitely put a lot of thought into concessions. I know I think about them sometimes too, and just usually when I'm about to order some.
So. Right.
So yeah, I mean, obviously anybody who's been to a ballpark or anything has seen, you know, sometimes there's unique items, sometimes there's deals on, you know, a dollar up for a hot dog or something like that. And these are all ways, I imagine, to get people to come to a game and to spend money. And so there's a lot of things going on there. You and your colleagues looked at these specific two issues and you had your hypotheses. Did you find these hypotheses to work out as you expected?
We did. We found that they were both supported. So consumers were likely to spend more money on concessions when the home team was winning versus losing. The mean difference there was an increase 52 cents per capita per person on concession sales when the home team was winning versus losing. And then as we thought over the course of the long NBA season, from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, we saw that per cap concession sales decline and the mean difference there was 53 cents per transaction. So I know people might be thinking 52 cents more or 52 cents less. Is this really a big of a deal? But it absolutely is. Concessions are critical to the bottom line of these sport organizations. And when you add 52 or 53 cents to a transaction on every transaction, thousands of those per game, and then over the course of a 41-game NBA season plus preseason plus playoffs, it equates to hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, in additional revenue or in declines in revenue if you don't take these types of factors into consideration. And the NBA actually is, you know, lower per cap concession sales than, say, the NFL league, where they have concession sales that go anywhere from around $75 per cap to $95 per cap in a Super Bowl or a playoff game. So the numbers get even bigger whenever you go to the professional sports that have the shorter seasons and the higher priced concessions items.
So the party that's making increased money from concession sales, is that teams or is that leagues?
It's teams. The different teams, the different venues have concessionaires that they contract and work with. And so from team to team and arena or stadium to arena or stadium, the concessions offerings, the prices, those are different based on who the concessionaires are. So there are companies like Aramark, Centerplate, Levi's Restaurant. So teams have a choice of who they contract with and they have choices in what they're offering and they really control that. And it has a lot to do with which company they choose to be their concessionaire. And actually a lot of what I've been researching and kind of where I'm going with this concessions factor as a part of the fan experience and part of what teams use to market their games I'm seeing a lot of different trends in concessions that relate to this per cap spend. And kind of the next paper that I'm writing focuses on four of these major trends that we're seeing in concessions that have a lot to do with using concessions to generate more profitability. So some of those trends that we're starting to see now in concessions that can help with this revenue generation strategy. One, we're seeing teams that are wanting to provide greater quality and variety in their concessions. So even though we know based on the research that most teams generate about 70% of their concessions on traditional items, which are things like hot dogs, hamburgers, that type of thing, we're seeing more fans want greater quality in the food, more variety, a lot more local options and local flavors that kind of reflect the culture and the city where they're watching the game. So for instance, if you're in Philly, people want to get a cheesesteak, or if they're in Miami, they want to sample authentic Cuban food. So we're seeing that people are willing to pay a little bit more if they can have quality and variety in their concessions options. Another trend that we're seeing, fans are demanding healthier food choices, believe it or not, even though we don't eat very well at games. I know I don't. But other people who are really responsible want more nutritious and healthier options. So I'm seeing things in the research and in our industry publications about more organic foods, things that are healthier, vegan options in some stadiums. I know Seattle's done a lot with making sure that they cater to their vegan audience. So you can sell a lot more concessions if you're providing what people want. If you don't have that, they're not going to purchase. So that's another trend. A third trend we're seeing that also helps with per capita spend on concessions is the technology that the stadiums and the teams are implementing to have more effective and efficient concessions operations from a logistical standpoint. So we're seeing apps where you can order mobily from your phone and have food delivered to your seat. So if you're the person who might have avoided purchasing because you don't want to get out of your seat, now you're going to get fans to spend that may not have because of the inconvenience. The Cowboys have a fan experience app where it does everything from show you the quickest way to get to the stadium on game day to also showing you in the stadium which concession stands have the shortest line so that you can get in and get out more quickly, and they can have quicker transaction times, which help with concession sales. And then the fourth trend, and this is one that's been going on a long time, is kind of this discussion of the pricing of concessions and really what's fair and not fair to the fans, since they're kind of in the stadium with nowhere to go and concessions prices are so high. So what do we do to keep concessions prices reasonable but still increase per cap spend?
Right, yeah. So just to kind of recap, it seems like, well, first of all, concessions provide a significant amount of revenue for teams, aside from tickets and TV money and things like that. And, you know, having a winning team puts people in the right atmosphere where they want to spend money, particularly at halftime, and that's what the original study that we just talked about has to do with. But, you know, and teams can control that a little bit by trying to field a team that is a better team. But there's all these other things that teams can potentially do to lure fans in, whether it's with these apps that you discussed or unique food items to encourage people to come and to spend more money. So when you see a Cuban sandwich place at a Miami ballpark, that's not just out of the kindness of their heart that they're doing that. It's an exciting new thing that's encouraging you to try and spend more money. In your study, it seems like it's been effective.
Absolutely. The implications of the study, just with regard to those two hypotheses that we looked at, like you said, you can't guarantee a winning team, and you don't often know at the beginning of the season what's going to happen. But I would say that you can somewhat predict how certain games are going to go versus different opponents. So you can look at games in the past or matchups that have been relatively successful for you, teams that are weak, especially going throughout the season when you start to see where the standings are, and you can really kind of gauge which games are likely to be played in your favor. And you definitely want to make sure whenever you're selling concessions that you're properly staffed, that you're well supplied so you don't run out of any items that people will want. If you know that against certain matchups when you're likely to be dominating the game, you're going to have a lot more people spinning at the concession stand, so you want to make sure that you're ready. We haven't done a study yet on merchandise, but you mentioned all the different ways that teams make revenue, and I think in the past there was such a big focus on media, sponsorships, and ticket sales, and concessions and merchandise were just kind of a necessary evil, if you will, that you supply applied those, but now teams are realizing those are really big areas where they can improve, whether it's technologically, with quality, with variety, with kind of knowing empirically how people purchase based on their mood and teams winning and losing. If the team's really doing well throughout the season, you want to capitalize on that with also your merchandise and your team store. Over the course of time, I would say if you're running promotions on things like concessions or merchandise, you probably want to position those toward the end of the season. Even though you tend to think in the beginning people are excited and they're purchasing more, and that's true based on novelty effect, you really want to capitalize on people spending at full price at the beginning of the season and not run too many promotions until maybe you've started to see your sales decline a little bit, and not offer too many discounts on the front end of the season so that you're better able to profit maximize. And then same things with concessions. Maybe if the team's not doing well or it's the latter part of the season, you want to tailor your promotions to make sure that you're running those during kind of those valleys and not during your peaks, and give up revenue that you don't necessarily have to if you know kind of the psychology behind how people purchase and how the performance of the team and the time of the season is also impacting your sales. So there's a lot of different things to take away from this. And I think those trends that I talked about are things that you can also implement winning or losing and beginning of the season or end. Those are things that you really want to think about year in and year out. And there's certainly trends we're going to see gain a lot more traction going forward because we're already seeing teams doing these things now.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's really interesting. I've obviously seen concessions. I've seen merchandise. That's one thing I think that I'm susceptible to. I know, you know, I go to a different city. I go to New York, and, you know, I'm originally from Boston, so I'm a Red Sox fan, but I'm at a Mets game, and I think, oh, I should buy a hat and things like that, and I'll pay $40 for a hat when I know I can get it for $30 online. So I've been a victim, if you will, of marketing.
We all have.
And it's, I guess the thing to take away here is there's a lot going on behind the scenes that creates the environment that makes people like me want to purchase those things.
Absolutely. And I would just say from a researcher standpoint that if there are teams or leagues or events or arenas that want to learn more about this and think they could benefit from analyzing some of their data or looking at some of their, you know, specific information or trends, that's what people like myself do for a living. And there is really there's a science behind how people act, how people purchase, how your mood and your attitude affects your behavior, and your behavior is what causes you to purchase, and the team has an effect on that mood, which then affects your behavior. And the more you understand the science behind how people behave, and in particular how fans behave, because that they're such a unique group of people, I guess, which is why I love studying all of this. The more you understand your fans and the more you understand consumer psychology, then the better business you can conduct, and you really can maximize your revenue in ways that maybe you didn't realize before.
Well, yeah, no, that's very interesting stuff. Thanks for taking time to discuss this with me today. If people, you know, if anybody wants to share proprietary data with you, I'm sure
we would absolutely analyze it for you.
Yes, exactly. And if anybody just wants to kind of follow your work, they can follow you on Twitter. I can post a link to that online.
Great.
So, is there anything else you have to say before we finish up?
No, but thank you so much for having me. And I love talking about sport marketing and fan and consumer behavior anytime.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for coming along and participating in the Sports Law Biz podcast. This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend Lieb Montoya for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIB Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.